हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
In his purport, the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.1.1, Srila Prabhupada neatly sums up the relationship between Brahma's creation, Visarga, and the Lord, Sarga. The Supreme Lord himself does the real creation by agitating his material energy, and then, by his order, Brahma, the first living creature in the universe, attempts to create the different planetary systems and their inhabitants, expanding the population through his progeny, like Manu and other progenitors of living entities, who work perpetually under the order of the Supreme Lord.
Is there a significance to the word attempts? Does it indicate that it's faulty? Or
no, attempts means that he's making his efforts, but it's actually only by the grace of the Lord that it's happening. So it's not actually that he is creating. Right, so it's not that he creates a different place. He attempts to. He makes the endeavor. The Lord's energy transforms and becomes all this. But it's like everything that we do.
Yes.
Right? We make an endeavor, and then by the Lord's arrangement, the energy transforms and we get what we expect.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Therefore, attempts.
Yes.
Right? Because also here, attempts to create the different planetary systems and their inhabitants. Like, it didn't work out well with the four Kumaras, right? And Shiva was born, appeared because of that. Then he asked him to create, and his descendants just were destroying things because he's the destroyer, right?
Yeah.
So then he told him, it's okay, you don't need to. So there's also that aspect of the attempts. And then Swayambhuva just appeared on his own while he was thinking, so he's connected to it. He came from the thought, but it wasn't that he was trying to manifest like this. It's by the Lord's arrangement. So many things happen like that. And even you set it up, then it always starts falling apart. So then demigods come and say, woe or us. Can you do something here? Okay. So here is that the Lord, just by glancing, then the material energy has already gone into the 24 elements, right? Then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu puts those together into the primary creation. And so basically it's kind of one thing, the glance of Mahavishnu and the Virata of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. It's all part of one kind of. So that's what is meant is, he's already done that. So that's the real creation. This secondary creation is not actually the real creation, because the first one is connected to the Lord. It's his energy. There is no illusion there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
In the second one, then, even though things are created physically that we can see, the difficulty comes up is that there's an illusory aspect because we don't think it's connected to the Lord.
Yes.
Right? So what we're dealing with is actually illusion. Real, but illusion. The realness is that it's connection with the Lord, that it's the Lord's energy. The illusion is what we think it is. Is that?
Yes.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his purport to verse 2, Maharaj Pariket asked, what should the dying person do? In answer to this question, some sages want to say, do karma alone with sacrifices for going to Swarga. This is proved by the Vedas. Next verse answers. Sukadev goes on to warn that a student of the Vedas ought not be bewildered by the scriptural glorification of the apparently wonderful features of cosmic creation, right? Because that was the thing, is that in dealing with the Veda and its recommendation of this dealing with the universal form, then many become distracted by the universe itself, right? And so therefore, then this point, he should not become bewildered by the scriptural glorification of the apparently wonderful features. Right? What's wonderful about him is Krishna's arrangement anyway. But still, for the living entity, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't matter. It's just like you're sitting there and you're real hungry. Can I hand you a rock? Does anything? No, okay. That I understand it's pretty general and ordinary. What happens if I hand you a piece of gold that same size? Now you'll be satisfied. Now you can eat that, right? No, okay. So, okay, you're still insulted by the gold and all that. Okay, what if I bring out a diamond that big? Now you can eat that, right? So that's all the material world's doing. Now, I can glorify the position of gold and everything like that, the position of the diamond. I can even talk about nice aspects of the rock. You know, just think of all the minerals in here. You know, people go out and buy, you know, medicines that are full of minerals. This rock comes naturally with minerals. Okay. Problem is you can't do anything with them. So that's the thing, is even though swarga's there, people live a long time, they don't age, so many different aspects, but there's nothing there for the soul. Right? So that's why, therefore, he says, being bewildered by the scriptural glorification of the apparently wonderful features. Right? The real wonderful features are, it's God's creation. The apparently wonderful are what we think we can do with it. You know, what benefits we'll get, meaning we mean the body, not we the soul. Right? And even there, the ones about liberation, because it's not actually a benefit to the soul. It's only a benefit to the conditioning. That's the difficulty, is that these philosophies, they're interesting to the conditioned aspect of the soul. Because to the soul, what's the big deal about a temporary situation in eternity? But here we're not looking at eternity. So we talk about eternity, it looks great here. But then we are in a temporary situation in eternity. Right? So it's lacking. So it's not. And it will be very, very boring. Right, because there's no differentiation, there's no knowledge, there's no action, and therefore there's no happiness. Right? Mm-hmm. Happiness comes from an endeavor that generates a result. Mm-hmm. Right? So yes. that's the difficulty.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Just now you were speaking about liberation in Brahman.
Yes. Because that's temporary. You go to the spiritual world, that's not temporary, that's permanent. Says once going there means actually the spiritual planets in a relationship with the Lord. There doesn't mean the Brahman as the Brahma Jyoti, as it will be interpreted by, you know, the impersonalists. Does that make sense? Here, that's pretty standard. Everybody accepts the meaning of here. But there, until you get to the Bhagavan level of there, that's permanent. If you're on the Brahman or Paramatma realization of there, that would be temporary. Because there's no completeness for the soul there. In that. Right? Does that make sense? It's complete for Krishna. Because it is him. Right? But we being what we are, then it's not complete. Does that make sense? Those who slip into such bewilderment think that the only purpose of the Vedas is to direct them towards the different sense enjoyments offered in different stations within the material universe. For example, the kingdoms of heaven. Right? So these are stations. These are just positions you find yourself in. Right? They're not permanent kind of elements. Right? Okay, footnote 5. The Lord describes these unintelligent persons as follows. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Bhagavad Gita 2:42-43. Srila Prabhupada comments. It is very difficult for such inexperienced persons. Right? Now we're talking about here good birth, opulence, power, sense gratification. Now in this world, we call this an experienced person.
Yeah.
But the Vedas call him an inexperienced. Right? Yes?
It appears that in the second canto, everything we describe, it's unreachable by materialist or any other religion people, because the time and space and all whatever we discuss, people don't even think about it on that level. They
no.
can't conceive it any.
No, no. Basically, the Bhagavatam is saying that there is only pure devotional service. Everything else is basically worthless. It's only worth is if you can somehow or another connect it to Krishna. Like the person's wealthy, it's worthless. Right? The soul will get no satisfaction. But if somehow or another comes in contact with Krishna, uses his wealth connected to Krishna, now it becomes perfect. Right? It means that he has a religious sentiment of being regulated or being nice or being good, but it's wasted on the soul because it's only in connection with his conditioning. And it will all be applied to the extension of his conditioning. You know, means of what he perceives of this world. So it's still going to be useless. But connect that to Krishna, he can lead a religious regulated life. It becomes valuable. You know, the person is very intelligent, but if it's not connected to Krishna, then he'll speculate in all kinds of things, never come up with anything of value for the soul. So it'll be a waste of time. Right? So we'll say these are all nice wasting of time, but they don't mean anything. You know, so the only benefit of these, good birth, power, so forth, sense gratification, opulent life, is that these things can be used nicely in Krishna's service. Someone in that position has time to contemplate and think. Right? The wealthy person, he may not because he's so busy, but he technically doesn't have to. Like I remember, just a short time back, hearing about somebody who, they have enough money that if they live the lifestyle they're living now, they could live the rest of their life without having to work one day, but still they're working. You know, so they may do, but they don't have to. So they could take that time off to read and study and chant and go to the temple and do all these things. But, you know, they choose not to. They somehow or another have this idea that I called before the class, but you don't get through. And then I figured they'll probably call during the class.
So this investing into spiritual practice, that would be the natural. Actually, if somebody is in that situation.
Yes. It's the natural position. That's why it's considered to be a better birth to be born into a religious or wealthy or brahminical family, because they will naturally be in a position to take advantage of spiritual life. Whether they will or not is another thing, but they're in the position to. And generally speaking, because one gets into that position by previous devotional service, there's every chance that there will awaken again this interest. So when one comes in, one will come in contact with it, and having come in contact with it, one will take advantage of it. Right? Now, someone who's born in the devotee family, then that's even more developed. Right? So they were more serious about devotional practice. So therefore, they're born in a devotee family. And then, immediately from before they're born, they're already engaged in, you know, going to Mangalarti, hearing kirtans, hearing Bhagavatam, and all that. So there are, you know, they kind of hit the ground running, you know, spiritually. And then, so the problem is not when they fall over when they're kids, and that they just get up and learn to walk. It's when they hit teenage and they fall over. That's the problem. You know, or run into walls, or, you know, fall into ditches, or, you know, they. So that the difficulty, yeah. So everything is of value when it's connected to the Lord, or when but if it's not connected to the Lord, it's of no value. Then of those things that can be connected to the Lord, the recommended ones are considered better than the ones that, you know, you can by so many, you know, adjustments connect. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, can we say that from Srimad Bhagavatam, what we learn is that dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, when we start practicing pure devotional service, we don't endeavor separately for those?
No, we don't endeavor.
If it comes, it comes. And if it's not, we just do our service.
Yes. Because in the service, it will include those things. Because your service means you're working under authority, you're doing something that you're supposed to be doing. You will make the endeavor to the best of your understanding with the facilities that are there, the senses are engaged. And the point is you're doing it without a desire for results for yourself. So then all four aspects of the Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are already covered, already in the service. See, the person who's enamored by it, then they spend extra endeavor working with it.
Right.
That's the point. They're enamored by the material energy, so then they work on the system dealing with the material energy. While we are doing exactly the same thing, but we're not bewildered by the material energy, so our focus is not on the material energy. We use it, but it's not on it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're in the kitchen, you're using the pot, and you're not sitting there thinking, wow, what a fabulous pot this was, and, you know, so much difficult to get, and how many people in Mayapur got a pot like this. And, you know, you're just cooking. You know, so that's the point is that, so the karma kanda, jnana kanda, upasana kanda, they're designed for those people who are distracted by the Veda, that they're still following the Veda. It's better you're a materialist and following the Veda than you're a materialist and not following. Right? That's the basic principle. You know, it's just like, yeah, that's all. It's easier, right? That, because it's something you can relate to, the Indian communities. They so naturally come around because they relate to the Veda. They're not well trained, right? But they relate to it. Therefore, at many temples around the world, your biggest aspect of community is Indians, like that. So that's the only advantage. Otherwise, on their own, what they're doing with that knowledge of the Veda is not necessarily progressing them in spiritual life, right? So that's the thing. Not at least in anything of substance, right? You know, it's nice, pious, but it's you know. So. Things are only useful because of their connection to the Lord. If it's not connected to the Lord, then that's why we say it is useless. People say, no, but it can be engaged. That's the point. If it's engaged, it's useful. If it's not, it's useless. You know? We have to be also very careful is that understand the material energy for what it is. But it's not that it can't be used. You know, just like we have it, like we give the example of the closet, you know, the closet we haven't opened for years. You know, not seriously other than open the door, take one thing that's, you know, the broom out and close it. But all the rest of the other 2 meters in there, we haven't looked at in years. So basically speaking, it's junk. We don't require it. Now, when we take it out, we'll find so many wonderful, important things. But we've been living for years without it. So that means all it is there's nicer junk and not so, and useless junk. Right? There's the stuff you should have thrown it out years ago instead of putting it in the closet. And there's things that are, instead of putting it in the closet, you should have given it to somebody because maybe they can use it. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the material world. So these better positions, better birth, wealth, intelligence, power, knowledge, renunciation, all these things are of value connected to Krishna. If they're not connected to Krishna, they're just good quality junk. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Let us say I want to give you a donation. Okay? So I write out a check and I put, I want to be, this should be good. So I put 5 zeros on there. Right? Good?
I'm impressed.
Okay. Someone else says, that's nothing. I'll put 8 zeros. Another, that's nothing. I put 27 zeros. Says, I didn't even bother. I just put zero to the zero, like that. Zero to the hundredth, I don't even bother writing it down, right? So, because otherwise, what do you get? You have zero, and even if you square it, you end up with nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Now they make a whole thing about it and sell tickets, but it's still nothing. Right? No?
Yeah.
So, therefore, but as soon as you put a 1 in front of it, then you have something really big. 27 zeros, put a 1 in front of that.
He's going to pay that.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's like... That's the material world. It's useful, connected. So we don't say, and the only reason it's useful is because it's Krishna's energy. So naturally, Krishna's energy can be engaged in Krishna's service because it's Him. But many times we'll come from the angle, it's useful because of the, it's valued in the modern culture, or it's, I value it. But in reality, it's none of those. Its only value is what it can do for Krishna. That's why the acharyas have no difficulty moving through the world and not being distracted by anything, because it's all just to be used in Krishna's service, and there's nothing separate than that that they have any interest in. Because like for Prabhupada, there's... he was telling, in Hong Kong, somehow or another I think it was Harpan's Law. A very wealthy, prominent person in the Sindhi community there. And I think they arranged for Prabhupada, when he visited, to stay in the Hilton. And on the top, on the 26th floor, they have the suite. And it basically takes up the whole floor there. It's got, all different rooms, bathrooms, kitchen. It's big. And so then a reporter came to see Prabhupada, and, you're a spiritualist, you're staying in this hotel. And then it's like, but for the spiritual master, because he's giving you God, there's nothing to compare, and you're just giving this little room. It says if the hotel was made out of solid gold, all 26th floor, it still wouldn't be enough to reciprocate. Or in Australia, then Prabhupada was picked up in a Rolls Royce. Right? And I think somebody put, Swami rolls in. So like that. So you have this element of that. But Prabhupada really couldn't care less. Well, I think it was when they were on 26th Second Avenue. Unless it had moved up to 61 Second Avenue or something. But it's still down at that end of the development of Krishna consciousness. That somebody had, either gotten a hold of, gotten donated, or joined with one of these old, funky, hippie buses, right? A hippie bus generally is a old school bus, right? The one that the municipality doesn't want anymore because it's not safe enough for the kids, right? You know, and so then they put them up. You can buy them very cheap, a few hundred bucks, buy a whole bus. So this bus is that, I think the seats weren't in it, you know, because a hippie bus, you should be able to put mattresses and sit, you know, have a party. And there was also sometimes, you know, from the exhaust, you get it eats away and there's a hole in the floor and everything like that. So in this bus that they were going to go out on Harinam or go to a program, so they get the bus out there. They put like a piece of plywood or something over the hole, and they take a regular chair and plunk it down for Prabhupada to sit on. And the devotees notice that they're thinking that, you know, this is a real piece of junk. But Prabhupada's thinking, no, this is fabulous. Why? Because it's Krishna's bus. Every other car on the road is simply material. So even if it's a nice, you know, how you say, Rolls or a Bentley or a Cadillac or something, but it's still mundane. But this is Krishna's bus. So that's all that matters to Prabhupada. You know, it doesn't matter all this nice facility. It's just if it's Krishna's, then it's great. If it's not Krishna's, who cares? Like that. So that's it's a very different vision. This is what, because we're opening with this. This is just trying to get the vision. So then seeing that, then when you look at it, then what is important about Kardama and Devahuti is the connection to Krishna. You know, Kasyapa Naditi, the connection to Krishna. Even with Diti, it's because their children will be Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, who are connected to Krishna. Right? Because who cares about Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha except that they're killed by Krishna? If they weren't killed by Krishna, who cares? You know, so many demons are there. There's tons of demons. We only hear one or two of the names. Right, there's whole communities, all these different planets below the earth, all the ones below the earth. Those are all the demoniac mentality. Like that. And they in a good facility, they follow Vedic culture and that, so there's billions of them. But we never hear about it except for the prominent ones. Like that. Yes.
Can you say that just by hearing this vision will develop one day?
Yes. Because if you, it's just like someone, you know, you're sitting there, you're not thinking about it all, and someone comes back and says, "Wow, you know, we went on holiday here, and it was so good, and it was fabulous, and so restful," and you know, it just goes on and on and on. So, what does that do? Yeah, you know. So that's the idea. Just that this one takes a little longer. <You know. laughs> Like that. But the recommendation is you could do it as quickly as generating that interest in that holiday.
But it generates and then fades away.
Yeah, but that's just it. So that's why that constant, that's why the position of consistent association, consistent service, consistent hearing and chanting, all these are important because then it starts to develop it where it becomes stable. That's why these terms are always used. Right. So what we'll see is that there's nothing new added that wasn't in the Gita. What we're getting is more and more deeper understandings and broader understandings of the same thing. Right? Because when we say the ABCs, right? Let's say the child learns the ABCs, okay? They learn all 26 letters, okay? And like that. Now when they get into, they get to college and they do, how do you say,
ABCD?
No. What do you call it? What is it called? Literary appreciation and stuff. Or advanced, you know, kind of writing, or let's say they're taking a journal, a course in journalism. Are there more letters to learn? No. It's more how to use it. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening. So Bhagavatam, there's not something more. We're thinking, well, there's more here than Gita. No, it's the same thing. Everything's been given in Gita. Now we just see the broadness of it. You know, it's just like you have that Sarva Dharma Parityaja. So here we have a whole book just dedicated to explaining from that perspective. Right? But the techniques all explained before that, that's what's used. So we'll always come up with the same principles again, but we just see, you get a deeper and deeper understanding.
Srila Prabhupada comments.
it is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. As fools are attached to the flowers of poisonous trees without knowing the results of such attractions, unenlightened men are similarly attracted by such heavenly opulence and the sense enjoyment thereof. Persons who are attached to demigods to the exclusion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like the animals who follow the herdsmen even though they are taken to the slaughterhouse. Right. So here, attached to demigods through the exclusion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. So one may have a connection with the demigods, but if you see it in relationship to the Supreme Lord, then it's not a problem. You know, then the next natural step is just directly the Supreme Lord. Then you see the demigods in relationship back like that. Rather than, I see the demigods, they're connected to the Lord. I see the Lord, the demigods are connected to Him. While Shastra may superficially praise the glories of life in higher material atmospheres to attract persons of lusty demure to religiosity, the actual goal of the Vedas is the attainment of the spiritual world, right? So Vyasadeva's looking at it here, and the Shastra's looking at it, that the person's a materialist. Now, what's a materialist going to do? Right? He's going to do whatever it takes to get what he wants. Now, if you point out that by following the Vedas, that's how you're really going to get what you want. They're going to follow the Vedas. Right? But now, if at one point you ever ask why, then Krishna will send the devotees. Then you're already living the lifestyle. You already have faith in the Vedas, in Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, in regulated life, the process. It means everybody gets up in the Brahma Muhurta. You know, everybody does some sadhana at that point. You know, everybody does all these. So what we do, everybody does. Just they use different books, have different kinds of gurus, different kinds of food, this, that, but it's the same thing. Right? So now all it is you come in contact now with bona fide spiritual master, bona fide rituals, bona fide everything, and everything's perfect. It's not a problem for you. You've been living like that your whole life. Does that make sense? You know, if you've been a vegetarian your whole life, the only difference is now you offer it to Krishna instead of just eating it straight or offering it to a demigod. It's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? You've been wearing a dhoti, you wear a tilak, you wear have a sika, you have a brahmin dress. Right? You take your bath 3 times a day. You know, you wash your hands, mouth, and feet after eating and going to the toilet. Then it's not a problem. You're already doing that. But now it's because it pleases Krishna. Rather than it's just pious and will get me material benefit. That's the whole idea. But the problem is then the people will get conditioned by this mode of goodness, as Krishna points out in the Gita, and figure that this is fine. You understand? So when devotees may say that, oh, what's the problem? We're devotees, we're engaged. That's conditioned by goodness. The activity may or may not be goodness, but that they turn that into a regulated element of their life, then that's conditioned by goodness. So that's the distraction. That's why it's meant, why it's considered even not a proper way of applying dharma. You know what I'm saying? So we're looking at what's improper ways of applying dharma, get rid of that. Then you have dharma, now you get rid of the wrong attitude. Does that make sense? So ignorance is you don't understand what should be done, so then you connect it to the Veda. And the proper way to do it, so there's no ignorance, and it's just passion. Then you kick out the passionate attitude, then you're left with goodness. Right? Then from that you kick out the association of passion and ignorance, you know, because it's connected to the Lord, then it's pure goodness. So that's the steps.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Like that. But by surrendering to the Lord, these steps are all accomplished. It says superficially, right? Knowing this, an enlightened soul should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life. Minimum means what's required to be comfortable.
Yes.
Comfortable, Prabhupada says, you're not uncomfortable. Right? So it works nicely. Life goes smoothly. Right? You know, when you come in, you do put a little table next to the door, and on the table you do have a bowl, and so when you walk in you put the keys there so that when you walk out you know where they are. Right? One can say, you know, why do we need that table in a bowl, right?
Otherwise you never get out of the
bowl. You won't get out of the house, right? So then you won't get to the Tampa programs. So that's minimum. Right? He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. Right? Because unwanted means it distracts from devotional service. Being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. All these other things you do, and they don't give you anything. At the time they seem, yes, this is going to give, there's so much idea. Then when you go through with it, you see there's nothing there. That's why it's Maya. Because we're thinking that this arrangement will satisfy me. Me means the soul, but they don't know it's the soul. Because the body doesn't care, really. You know what I'm saying? It really doesn't matter. You know, it sits out in the backyard and composts, and really it's not complaining. You know, it's not like it's out in the backyard going, hey, I'm out here, you know, hello.
Anyone?
You know? Yeah, so, you know, it's not doing it. It doesn't care. That's the thing. We care. Right? Yeah, that's the thing. We care. Okay. Srila, 2 and 3. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purports to verse 3. The Bhagavad Dharma, or the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Because cult means cultivation. Right? People take a word and make it bad. They take that, oh, cult means is bad. No, that's just how it's used.
Take other words and make them good.
Yeah, like that. And so, you know, things that weren't political now is good as long as it's with correctness. Yeah. You know, then it's good. But otherwise, before it's, oh, he's political. Oh, that's bad. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, like that. It just depends where you are. You know, but other places, if you say he's, you know, politically astute and everything, you think, oh, he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it just depends upon the context. So the Bhagavad Dharma, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, is perfectly distinct from the way of fruitive activities, which are considered by the devotees to be merely a waste of time. The whole, because fruitive activity means an activity done where the result is yours. Right? That's a waste of time. It's not that the activity is a waste of time. Right? The whole universe, or for that matter, all material existence, right? Whole universe is our universe, and if you take all the unlimited universes together, is moving on as jagat, simply for planning businesses to make one's position very comfortable or secure. Although everyone sees that his existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Even though people see like that. You know, when is it actually going to...
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, I worked very hard, I got my house, I'm paying the mortgage. Right? The mortgage will take 25 to 30 years. Right? At 25 to 30 years, you know, by that time, basically, you're retiring. Okay? Now, when you retire, then fine, you think, then I have a house to live in. But the problem is what does a house look like after 25 to 30 years? It needs to be, you know, something done. Where's the money? You're living off retirement. You know, you understand? So it's never going to be secure. And even you have it, you have there, who's to say that, you know, someone else is not going to come and take it away? There's not going to decide to put a highway right where your house is, you know, or make it into an airport or, you know, a mall, you know, something, right? You know, so it's never secure, right? Unless you want to live in the basement of, like, you know, how you say, Kmart or something. It might give you a spot. I'm not moving. You know? Okay, you can stay in the basement. Okay, yeah. What to do? I saw that in Calcutta. There was I don't know what it was, but there was this guy there. He had this little dinky stall, you know, like selling like Moody or something on the street. He had his spot, and he wasn't selling. You know, I think he's one of these ones that, you know, sometimes you see they'll have one stall and they'll split it in half. And below there's one guy like that, he does, you know, pawn or BDs. And the guy above does like cold drinks or other things like that. One stall. So he had one of that lower stall. I'm not joking. So then that going along, and then they start this building, and then at the end, when the building was there, you had this big fancy building, and you had this one spot where there was this hole where this guy was sitting inside. Yeah, it's right there on Theater Road, right? Eventually, after many years, I guess they must have convinced him, and he sold, because they don't see him anymore. But he wasn't moving. He had his spot, you know. The whole universe, or for that matter, all material existence, is moving on as jagat, simply for planning business to make one's position very comfortable or secure, although everyone sees that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization, following the way of phantasmagoria, right, are certainly madmen, right? We saw before, is this phantasmagoria, is just what the mind thinks of it, right? So why use this? Because that was the point that the, you know, philosopher said, is that you have all this information coming in and you interpret what it is, and so then you have an idea of what is the world. It's not necessarily that's what it is, right? So even the, you know, the materialistic philosophers catch this point.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. The whole material creation is a jugglery of names only. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter like earth, water, and fire. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions of the three modes. That's a fancy name, so it sounds nice. You know, it's just like you can take the most ordinary food and say it in French. It sounds fabulous. You know? Yeah. Like that.
So, but not for the French people.
No, not for the French people, but people who are not French. You know, you can make a whole menu in French and just, you know, regular old, you know, like hot dogs or something like that. And it'll sound really great in French.
Saucisse.
Yeah, sounds a lot better. Or, you know,
I'm a vegetarian, you know, but I'm tempted.
Yeah, yeah. Like that, yeah. You know, or worse, you know, corn dog, right? That was really low on the totem pole. Right? Since the devotee of the Lord knows them perfectly well, he is not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significant, but simply names of no more significance than the babble of sea waves. Right? That's as much, because we say why the babble of sea waves, because the wave comes in, makes a sound, and then it's gone. And is there anything left? Is there any history there? There's, you know, some great significance of that wave. You know, wave 3,999,997, you know, 0.2, 0.4, 0.1, right? You know, excuse me, 0.2. It doesn't matter. The great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. Footnote 6. In Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.1.9, 1 through 9, it is said, seeing the kings of this earth busy trying to conquer her, the earth herself laughed. She said, quote, just see how these kings, who are actually playthings in the hands of death, are desiring to conquer me. Great rulers of men, even those who are learned, meet frustration and failure because of material lust. Driven by lust, these kings place great hope and faith in the dead lump of flesh called the body, even though the material frame is as fleeting as bubbles of foam on water. Kings and politicians imagine, quote, first I will conquer my senses and mind, then I will subdue my chief ministers and rid myself of the thorn pricks of my advisors, citizens, friends, and relatives, as well as the keepers of my elephants. In this way I will gradually conquer the entire earth. End quote. Because the hearts of these leaders are bound by great expectations, they fail to see death waiting nearby. After conquering all the land on my surface, these proud kings forcibly enter the ocean to conquer the sea itself. Right? So means we can understand is that the, how you say, modern materialistic mentality actually hasn't even come to this level of perfection because they haven't really tried to conquer the ocean yet. You know, they float around on the top a bit, but not. What is the use of their self-control, which is aimed at political exploitation? The actual goal of self-control is spiritual liberation. But just on another note, then it's even it's interesting. The British. You know, one of their anthems, you know how, "Oh Britannia, Britannia rules the waves," like that, you know. So then you do have that element that they think that they are now the conqueror of everything because they have the land and the ocean, like that. So then that puts the mentality a touch lower than others, right? it's somehow or another in the modern scene as when they go out on the ocean, then that means then they're more advanced. You know, like the Polynesians get in their boats and float around, and they're more advanced than some of the other ones.
Yeah.
Like that. But actually, it shows that the mentality is even more. What is the use of their self-control, which is aimed at political exploitation? The actual goal of self-control is spiritual liberation. Although in the past, great men and their descendants have left me, departing from this world in the same helpless way they came into it. Even today, foolish men are trying to conquer me. For the sake of conquering, materialistic persons fight one another. Fathers oppose their sons, and brothers fight with one another, because their hearts are bound to possessing political power. Political leaders challenge one another. Quote, "All this land is mine, it is not yours, you fool," end quote. Thus they attack one another and die. No. Yeah. So we see here is, and then who wins at the end? Right? In other words, the body after dying then becomes what element?
Earth.
Right? Even though they spent their life trying to conquer the earth, eventually it's just a matter of time. Then they're conquered by the earth.
Something in the throat.
Maybe. Not happy. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. The fruitive worker aspires after a big fortune in the matter of wealth, women, and worldly adoration. But those who are fixed in perfect reality are not at all interested in such false things. For them, it is all a waste of time. The materialistic advancement of civilization is called, quote, "the civilization of the demons," end quote, which ultimately ends in wars and scarcity. The transcendentalist is specifically warned herewith to be fixed in mind, so that even if there is difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from his stark determination. Stark because there is nothing there in the material world, so he's not going to budge from that. It's not that the material world becomes nicer, right? The material world becomes, you view it as connected to Krishna, but separate from Krishna, it doesn't become any better. Right? You just actually see how it's not better. For a transcendentalist, it is a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world, because such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. Sugata Goswami met Maharaj Prickett when the latter felt a necessity for such a meeting, right? Because it's all about association. You associate with transcendentalists, you develop that way. You associate with materialists, you develop that way. Right? It is the duty of a transcendentalist to help persons who desire real salvation and to support the cause of salvation. One might note that Sukadeva Goswami never met Maharaj Prickett while he was ruling as a great king. So just after, when he's looking for that aspect, then he has something to offer. Because otherwise, he's engaging everything in the Lord's service as a king. But now, that element of, how you say, completely detaching oneself from the world, That's going on. That's what Sukadeva is doing. Something to say. Srila Vishnu. Okay. Hopefully they're not unhappy. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms. One should accept only as many material objects as one needs to support the body because one is attentive to perfecting one's sadhana. Though one sees many obstacles, one does not deviate from one's practice. He concludes, whatever happens, simply happens. Whatever I've decided, that is certain. The amount needed to support the body of a young person is not the same as one's own needs. Though there are other ways of supporting the body, one does not attempt them, because in such efforts there is labor of worshipping wealthy men, etc. It is like grinding that which has already been ground. That's an interesting bumper sticker, right? Whatever happens, simply happens.
Yeah.
That is a question.
I'm not sure I just understand the last part. Though there are other ways of supporting the body, one does not attempt them because it's just... Okay, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think I get it.
Right, so in other words, the amount needed to support the body of a young person on one level is you need so many things.
Mm.
Right, because there's this idea that'll be there, but what you actually need is not
yeah.
important. Or the young person, you may have different needs as you get older, whatever. But the point is one doesn't take up the attempt of ways that mean you have to get too materially absorbed.
Yes.
Otherwise, then what's the point? What's the use? How then should we live? Sukadeva approves a life of renunciation of even standard material amenities. Quote, one may sleep on the ground instead of a bed, resting his head on his arm instead of a pillow. His palms can serve well enough as a cup. The skins of trees he can accept as clothing. The trees also provide ample fruits for food. A renunciate on the path of self and God realization need not at all flatter householders for his survival. Right? So he just lives whatever comes easily, that's what he uses. More comes, he uses that. Less comes, he uses, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. But one shouldn't make that endeavor to flatter others to make one's life work, right? Does that make sense? Because it's not the duty. The spiritual duty doesn't require that, right? And one's occupational duties, then there's going to be some of this. That's why it's not considered so nice. Like the brahminical duties, technically you don't have to flatter anybody. Right? It means you could and get more, but then that's the problem. Then you reduce the standard. Kshatriyas, they do have to flatter people. You can't just be straightforward with everybody because you're dealing in the political field. Most people can't handle direct dealings. You do have to flatter. Does that make sense? Business, that's what it's all about. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's more and like that. You know, so as it goes down, these elements get more, so it gets more entangling. Srila Prabhupada clarifies the meaning of these verses. If we make a study of the general life of the animals, we can see that they have no intelligence for building big houses, furniture, and other household paraphernalia. And yet they maintain a healthy life by lying down on the open land. They do not know how to cook or prepare foodstuffs, yet they still live healthy lives more easily than the human being. This does not mean that human civilization should revert to animal life, or that the human being should live naked in the jungles without any culture, education, and sense of morality. An intelligent human cannot live the life of an animal. Rather, man should try to utilize his intelligence in arts and science, poetry and philosophy. In such a way, he can further the progressive march of human civilization. But here, the idea given by Srila Sukadeva Goswami is that the reserve energy of human life, which is far superior to that of the animals, should simply be utilized for self-realization. Right? So these other things, one is doing whatever is required, but that reserve time, that should be used all in spiritual life. Right? Advancement of human civilization must be towards the goal of establishing our lost relationship with God, which is not possible in any other form of life than the human. Right? So if one's only working to get facilities to live, and like, and living means to go out and work to maintain that facility, that's kind of a waste of time. Right? If that's all the time you have, there should be extra time that one can devote to spiritual upliftment. Otherwise, one is maintain oneself, maintain the family, and then one dies. And then what? What has been the benefit? What's been the gain? That's the point. One must realize the nullity of the material phenomena, considering it a passing phantasmagoria, and must endeavor to make a solution to the miseries of life. Self-complacence with a polished type of animal civilization, geared to sense gratification, is delusion, and such a quote-unquote civilization is not worthy of the name. In pursuit of such false activities, a human being is in the clutches of maya or illusion. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the Supersoul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life. And by worship, so that's the point, Paramatma, you're worshiping him because he's always with you. He is the goal of life. Therefore, Paramatma is in the position of Aniruddha, or Prayojana. Right. And by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. He should do more in rendering service to the Lord than mere pantheistic meditation upon the Virat Rup. Right? Right. So it's not just that. Those are useful in the activities. In other words, if you have that extra time, you should be using that in direct devotional activities. When you're dealing with the indirect anyway, that's the time to utilize the universal form. Right?
Mm-hmm. So, yes. When someone is worshipping universal form or Paramatma, means he's not fully aware that he is eternal servant of Krishna.
Means there is that class of transcendentalists or yogis like this, jnanis. But it's not the position of the devotee. The devotee knows this Krishna. He just doesn't always make the connections, that's all.
Yes.
Just with time you make more and more of the connections, yes. But in the beginning one may not make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all right as long as the connections one make are fully absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like the gopis are just thinking of Krishna's smile or the sound of his flute. It's not that there's more to think about. They can keep themselves completely busy with that. Right? So it's not a problem if one's absorption is very direct and very simple, as long as one is absorbed. So these other aspects are there simply to bring one to the point of understanding its devotional service. Right? So the dealing with the Virat Rup is to understand that bhakti is the highest and to be engaged in that way. But it's not that it in itself remains that way. Right? Because if you're comparing everything to the Lord, then the point is what does the Lord do with those things? You know, okay, the mountains are like his feet, but in Vrindavan, what does he do with his feet? Right? He's climbing mountains with them. You know, so that is the point. You want to get to that point rather than the other point. Because that's why he says mere, because Krishna says you're only he's only manifesting, you know, a millionth of a millionth portion of his potency to run this place. So that's why it's mere. It's connected to him, but it's only a small amount. It's not great. Srila Prabhupada explains, after one is liberated from the conditions of material existence, i.e. when one is nivrita, as previously stated herein, footnote 7, Tam nivrito niyatarto bhajeta. Being detached from the world, one must constantly worship the Lord in order to obtain the supreme gain. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.26. Or when one is freed from all material necessities, one becomes qualified to discharge the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, bhakti yoga includes jnana yoga, or in other words, the process of pure devotional service simultaneously serves the purpose of jnana yoga. Liberation from material existence is automatically achieved by the gradual development of pure devotional service. So it's automatically included. One may take note that Vedanta Sutra, Adhyaya 4, Pada 3, presents the path of liberation much as Srila Sukadeva Goswami will in this chapter, from verses 22 to 30. In these verses, Sukadeva traces the ascension of the meditator in stages from earth up to Brahmaloka, and finally to the spiritual realm of the Lord. But this path, which Srila Prabhupada termed gradual, in the previous chapter, verse 32 purport, is said in verse 22 of the present chapter to be for yogis who retain some desire for material improvement or mastery of mystic siddhis. Take careful note of Srila Sukadeva Goswami's personal recommendation of the direct method of devotional service, which he espouses both before and after verses 22 to 30. Also, Srila Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 44, cites two verses from Srimad Bhagavatam that confirm that only one of the two methods is unreservedly supported by the Bhagavatam, i.e., Bhakti Yoga. Okay. The born and unborn demigods pray. O Lord, persons who, because of their serious attitude, attain the stage of enlightened devotional service, achieve the vairagya saram, the essence of vairagya, complete meaning of renunciation and knowledge, and anjasa, quickly attain the Vaikuntha loka in the spiritual sky by drinking the nectar of your topics. Others who are pacified by means of transcendental self-realization and have conquered over the modes of nature by dint of strong power and knowledge also enter into you, but for them there is much pain, whereas the devotee simply discharges devotional service and thus feels no pain. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.5, 46-47. Right, so not feeling pain, that's the point of liberation, right? People want liberation to not feel pain. Right? So the point is that's already obtained in devotional service. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, the word Akunta Dishnyam 3546 means Vaikuntha Loka Vishadasasya verse 46 means abandoning all duplicity and accepting devotional service as the only goal of life. In the second of these verses, right, so here it's interesting. So here duplicity is abandoning, means by giving up duplicity one can get devotional service, because otherwise it's the only goal of life. So duplicity means there's something other than devotional service is the ultimate goal, right? Now there's something as the different from the ultimate goal. That means there'll be a value in it, so an endeavor for it. And so naturally, if one's making an endeavor for it, one's going to judge others according to this standard. Yes. Right? So that's going to create criticism. Yes. Right? Therefore, the kutinati being, how you say, translated as criticizing others or fault-finding, and translated as duplicity. It's the same thing. Only if you're duplicitous can you be fault-finding.
Yes.
Right? Because if there's nothing other than Krishna, then you're only going to see things in relation to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
How do you get rid of that?
By being convinced that there's only one goal of life.
So if you have it, if you're not convinced,
No, you may be convinced, but you also have other things that you are convinced about. multitasking. In the second of these verses, the inferiority of both means and ends of they who are attached to the path of philosophical speculation, jnana, is described. The word apare, others, here means they who desire liberation. For them, there is much labor and trouble. So the process is very difficult. The results they get is very meager. Right? However, for they who accept the service of the Lord as the only goal of their lives, there's no great labor and trouble. Right? No great labor and trouble. There's always some endeavor and some trouble. It's just the material world, but nothing great. They always experience great bliss as a result of their devotional service. And they also attain liberation as a byproduct of that service. This verse was spoken by the born and unborn demigods to the Supreme Creator. That's coming in chapter, canto 3. So when we get there, we'll discuss it. Very esoteric. Thus the Bhagavatam is not only a commentary upon Vedanta, but the only divine literary vehicle that can transfer one beyond the range of Vedanta. Hence, Srila Prabhupada states in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 18, as long as one is within the limited jurisdiction of fruitive activities or is involved in mental speculation, he may perhaps be eligible to study or teach the theoretical knowledge of the Vedanta Sutra. But he cannot understand the supreme, eternal, transcendental, completely liberated vibration of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One who has achieved perfection in chanting the transcendental Hare Krishna vibration does not have to separately learn the philosophy of Vedanta Sutra. So it's already included in the Bhagavad understanding, because this is a commentary on that. You're naturally already going to get that. Yes.
I was achieved perfection, so that means you didn't achieve perfection, you still can learn it?
No, he said he's perhaps eligible to study or teach. Right. He may be, because he's very qualified. He's very knowledgeable, very practiced, very, you know, may have so many qualifications of Sanskrit and grammar and logic and all that. So they may be able to teach. But actually, the devotees, they're qualified to teach because they see it in connection to the Lord. But the Bhagavatam is the primary. Like that. It's never, the Vedanta becomes the primary. It's not that Vedanta can't be used as the primary, like in Ramanujacharya. Vedanta is there, Pancharatra, Vedanta Sutra, and the songs of the previous Acharyas. These are their three main bodies of work. So everything else is in support of these three. So they'll take Vedanta as primary, and then very supportive of that will be Vishnu Purana, Vishnu Dharmotra, like that. Because we saw before, Rupa Goswami is quoting that a lot, because it has very nice explanation of the Lord in his position. But for us, Bhagavatam's the main work. So for us, Vedanta Sutra is secondary, since this is the commentary on Vedanta Sutra, so it's already covered. Srila Sukadi Goswami. So, in other words, Vedanta can mean that it's material. But when it means it's spiritual, then that natural explanation of that spiritual understanding of Vedanta Sutra is Bhagavatam. Srila Sukadeva Goswami advises Maharaj Purkhit to serve the Supersoul within one's heart, for he is the eternal, unlimited, ultimate goal of life. By worshipping him, one becomes free from conditioned existence. Only the materialist will neglect such thinking. Meditation upon the Supersoul is superior to the Virat Rup meditation, described in the beginning of this chapter. The Supersoul is conceived as measuring only 8 inches and thus being transcendentally situated within the heart of every living entity. Srila Prabhupada explains. In Bhagavad Gita 12.5, it is said that the impersonalist undergoes a series of difficult programs on account of his impersonal meditation, but the devotee, due to the Lord's personal service, progresses very easily. Impersonal meditation is therefore a source of suffering for the impersonalist. Here the devotee has an advantage over the impersonalist philosopher. The impersonalist is doubtful about the personal feature of the Lord, and therefore he always tries to meditate on something which is not objective. For this reason, there's an authentic statement in the Bhagavatam regarding the positive concentration of the mind on the factual form of the Lord. Because he doesn't know actually what is the Supreme. Right? So it's interesting here is he doesn't know how to meditate upon something which is not objective. Right? So he doesn't know how to engage the senses. He just, it has to be impersonal. So he learns by meditating on the form of the Lord in Svirat Rupa. Concerning the size of the Lord's transcendental form, the second ray of light of Sripad Raghava Das Goswami's Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash has to say this. That Krishna's form is not material is also described in the Mahakarma Purana. The Supreme Lord's form is neither small, large nor small, but at the same time it is supremely large and supremely small. It is completely colorless, and at the same time it manifests various colors. All these contradictions exist within the Lord's supreme will, the Supreme Lord's form. Yeah. He's neither large nor small. I mean, he's just a nice size in the heart, but at the same time he's in every atom, between every atom, so that means he's really small. And then he's also very big, so Krishna on East, Giridakshaya Vishnu on the milk ocean is quite big. Right? And then, he's an expansion of Garbhadakshaya, he's bigger, he's an expansion of Mahavishnu, he's even bigger than that. So you could say the biggest form manifest is Karanadakshaya Vishnu. Right? Because he basically takes up one quarter of the cause of the manifestation. Yeah, big.
So now it is 8 inches. This.
It's the size of the thumb.
Just to give some indication?
No, it's just that's the size.
For a human being?
Yeah. It'll be the same kind of proportion in the other animals.
But a small animal with very small.
Yeah.
Cannot be 8 inches.
No, but it's the size of the thumb.
Yes.
So the thumb is smaller, yes. He's smaller. Like a baby, his thumb is smaller, so yes. Paramatma is smaller. And as you grow, he gets bigger. So that's why that position is given.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
He's adjusted. The size is adjusted.
Yeah, that's why he's not too big or too small. It's just the right size. Yes, it's just, if it's an elephant, it'll be bigger. Porcupine, a little smaller. In the next group of verses, Sukadev Goswami clarifies how one should visualize the Supersoul, who is transcendental and who lives in the hearts of all living beings. Quote, "The Lord displays four hands and in them holds a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club. His lotus eyes are beautiful. He wears yellowish garments, jewel-set ornaments, and garlands of fresh flowers. His lotus feet are placed over the hearts of the mystics who are fixed upon him in meditation. One thus should concentrate in meditation upon him, beginning from his lotus feet and progressing, as the intelligence becomes purified, to his smiling face. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service under the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties." Thus, the purpose of meditating upon the Virat Rupa, as Sri Srila Sukadeva Goswami made clear in the previous chapter is to assist our developing a service attitude to the Supreme Lord. Because mm-hmm. right? otherwise, these elements of material nature we're using outside of this.
Yes.
Right? That's the difficulty. 8:14. In his purport to verse 8, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur prescribes the progressions, the progress from meditation on the universal form to meditation on the spiritual form of the Paramatma. Sukadeva now speaks again about the process of dharana, of the yogis in the form of the Paramatma, which is superior to the universal form previously described. Quote, sam, kechit, refers to those who are superior to the yogis who meditate on the universal form, or those who, by practicing meditation on the universal form, which has been described, have become purified and then meditate on the spiritual form of Paramatma. There are four types of yogis who practice dharana. The first type meditates on prana and the mind without using the form of the Lord. This is not approved by the Bhagavatam. The second type becomes purified by meditating on the universal form just described, and then meditates on the forum form of the Paramatma, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, described in the third canto, 3:8:23. He saw the one Lord sleeping on the broad bed of Sesha, white like a water lily, in the waters of devastation, whose darkness was dissipated by the light from the jewels on top of the thousands of umbrella-like hoods of Sesha. The third type, after meditating on the universal form, meditates on the Vyasti Virat, the Lord in the heart with four arms. The fourth type is pure in heart already. Some say that Kechit refers to those who, from the beginning, being pure in heart, meditate on the Vyasti Virat in the heart. Okay, so those who are only on the level of pranayama than that, they don't actually meditate on the form.
Yes.
They're always talking, you know, candles or nothing, or, you know, just meditating on the breath itself or like that. So they're yogis, but they're the lowest level. Next is the universal form, and then next is going to be the Paramatma. Right, so the fourth type means they've started from there. They've already started with the concept of the Lord. So the problem, yes.
The four one is close to a devotee.
Yes. So in other words, means the last two basically are the same, but the one went through the other processes, came to there, and this one basically
yes.
starts with that understanding.
Yes.
Right? It's not that you don't use these processes, but the point is that it's about the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains the progress in the meditation on the transcendental form of the Lord should match the aspirant's level of purification. Purification is defined as becoming free of sex desire. Things which are artificially acquired gradually disappear along with the progress of bhakti yoga. So artificially acquired means anything other than the soul. So if you have a body, or subtle body, you know, and then expand it from there. All this is artificially acquired. Meditation on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, the first processional step, must show its effect by anartha nivritti. The grossest type of anartha, which binds the conditioned soul and material existence, is sex desire. And the sex desire gradually develops in the union of the male and female. When the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. When all these are acquired, the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements, and the false sense of egotism, or the sense of myself and mine, becomes prominent. And the sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements, resembling the foam of the sea waves, which becomes very prominent at one time, at the next moment it vanishes as quickly as the cloud in the sky. Footnote 8. Here His Divine Grace paraphrases a well-known Bhagavatam verse. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and my. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.8. So we see it's more, the sex desire. I mean, it's starting from that and expanding from there, so everything connected to it. Right? So you only have to say the one and everything else goes along with it. Like if I say, the man's rich, then coming to mind, what goes along with it? Does he have a house?
Cars.
You know, what are cars? What, does he have nice clothes? You know, does he have, you know, nice watch? You know, what, you know, does it, all these things just go along with it. So you have the one, everything else goes with it. So when you say, what's the term used? Sex desire, then that just expands through everything. So it's simply this thing of I and mine. That's what you're doing, because I and mine means sex desire. So that's what starts out. That's why we come to the material world. That's why the whole material world is defined as right there. What's that? Maituna Agara. Right? Means it's the prison house of sex desire. And that's the shackles. One is bound by this. That's why one's here. One gives that up, then one's out of here. Yes.
Means Freud was right.
Freud. On one level, yeah. You know. But the problem is he can't expand it beyond that. He's just saying it's all on that, it all goes back to that, rather than these are the subtler forms, and they, it means, of course, everything does go back to that, but not necessarily as, how you say, grotty as he points it out to be. You know what I'm saying? In other words, subtly it does go back to there, but it's not necessarily that you connect the dots and you make all these different connections that he makes. Mm-hmm. Right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because all these political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, that falls in there also, because then according to his philosophy, his intense desire to study madmen and come up with these theories is also sex desire. But somehow or another, that never comes out in his philosophy.
Depressing.
Yeah. And he always just studies crazy people. He doesn't study normal people.
And it doesn't seem like he can actually help them. He can just study them.
Yeah, no, that's all. It's just studying. That's the interest.
But his interest might be because he was from the same category. That's why.
Yeah.
He liked.
Yeah. That's just he was intelligent. That's all. He was more clever than the others, so therefore he comes up with it. And other people are foolish enough to buy it, so therefore he gets this position in society. Otherwise, if nobody bought it, he would have been also in the same institution. Like that. You know, that's just karma, that somebody's in and somebody's out, that's all. It's just a matter of... Okay. The conditioned soul is encircled by such products as well as products of self-desire. And therefore, bhakti yoga leads to the gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely, profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire, right? Because these are the summary of them. This is what one's getting from all this. Right. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire, and one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degrees to which he has been freed from sex desire. The sex desire is diminished along with its various forms by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated. Knowledge means knowing things as they are, and if by deliberation it is found that there are things which are all unnecessary, naturally the person who has acquired knowledge leaves aside such unwanted things. Sukadeva Goswami has suggested some alternatives for the bare necessities of life, namely the problem of eating, sleeping, and shelter, but he has not suggested any alternative for sex satisfaction. So purification means getting freed gradually from sex desire, and this is attained by meditation on the person of the Lord, as described herein, beginning from the feet. One should not... Yeah, right. So, in other words, he's giving alternatives. So he hasn't said that the yogi doesn't sleep, or he's not eating. Right? But he hasn't mentioned an alternative to sex desire. So in other words, he's saying that just goes away. Right? There's no need for distinction, adoration, and profit. Right? So that just disappears. Yes?
So when Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarini, he's talking about the same thing, different... Aspects of the same thing.
Dhanam Janam Sundarim is distinction, adoration, and profit.
Yes.
Right. Good. I say. Yeah, I think the distinction is the wealth, right? The Janam is the. Oh, no, excuse me. The wealth is profit. The janam is distinction. Because amongst people, you stand out.
Yeah.
And the sundarim, that's the adoration. Mm-hmm. So that's just the forms that it comes through. Okay. Is that something? Yeah. So therefore, if you have very appreciative, wealthy woman, then you get all three at once. Right? It's all three together. Right? Everyone's making that endeavor, right, to make it all nice. That's how it works.
Yeah, perfection.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that.
These three things, they gave satisfaction only to the mind.
Within the material world, all you're looking for is through the mind, because the senses can't be satisfied, because the sense and the it only gets an effect when it's in contact with the sense object. As soon as it's not in contact with the sense object, one can even forget what is the interaction. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's the mind that was looking for this, because the sense really doesn't. The sense only just distinguishes between something's hot or cold, or smooth or hard, or bright or not so bright, or salty or sweet. It's mechanical. That's why it's controlled by, or let's say managed by, the intelligence. Right? I presume this is the Lord of intelligence. Because all you're doing is telling the difference between things, right? And there's an attraction. But that need, that's the mind, right? The need to be attracted in that way, or to distinguish in these ways, is then the mind. So the idea is the mind will be happy, but the mind's never happy. As soon as it gets one thing, then it goes to the next. Because it can only be happy for a moment. Because the present is only the length of a moment. It's not longer than that. So that's the longest you can be happy. If we say you can work really hard and then you'll be happy for 1/11th of a second, then people kind of, well, wait a minute here. It doesn't go. It's like something happens and the guy's there, And how long do they do that? And then after that, they look around and, their friends and this and that, and, where's the beer? They just completely forget everything. So if it was really going to make, they'd be doing that all the time. That's all that people would be doing, walking down the street and just making the sounds like that. But it's not happening. So because it's not happening, therefore everybody walking down the street is looking very sober. What to do. So purification means getting gradually free from sex desire, and this is attained by meditation on the person of the Lord, as described herein, beginning from the feet. One should not try to go upwards artificially without seeing for himself how much he has been released from the sex desire. The smiling face of the Lord is the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and there are many upstarts who at once try to begin with the 10th canto, and especially with the 5 chapters which delineate the Rasa Lila of the Lord. This is certainly improper. By such improper study or hearing of Bhagavatam, the material opportunists have played havoc by indulgence in sex life in the name of the Bhagavatam. So one hears properly, even one has material desire, but it's according to authority, then by hearing this Panchadhyaya, it gets rid of sex desire. But if one doesn't follow the authorized method, and one just jumps to the 10th canto, then it increases. So that's the point. So we start from the beginning. So we start with these first 2 cantos, understand them nicely. With that understanding, then we move up to the 3rd and 4th canto, like this. We gradually move up till we get to the 10th. Then when we get to the 10th, then we'll really appreciate what's happening there. Right? Otherwise, now it's like, you know, these technical parts are, you know, kind of, how you say, what was that? What was the word, you know, that it's translated, one of the repetition or torture? But what was the word? Do you remember the word? The Sanskrit word. It was something, it was an educational terminology. Oh. So then, No, it was something specific that meant that you're practicing. Then, you know, so then when we're hearing stories, then it's nice. It means it's not boring. But it's not that we're getting ecstasy by hearing these stories. Does that make sense? So that's what you can get from it. So it's just these parts are difficult because they're not so nice for us. But to the degree it's we find that, it's also it's not that nice for us either.
Yes.
You know? Well, that's the point. So when these become nice, then you can imagine how nice becomes the pastime.
Yes.
Right? You know, that's the way. Okay. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jainitai Gaura, Hare Nandini.